Welcome to the New Zealand Property Market Podcast, brought to you by CoreLogic, produced by Agents TV for the 25th of May 2020. I'm Head of Research, Nick Goodall, and I'm joined by our Senior Property Economist, Calvin Davidson, down in Christchurch. Calvin, how are you, mate? Good weekend?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. And yeah, the weekend's good. We had a very tired little new school boy on our hands, so... Yeah, there was it was basically about him recovering, really. So we didn't do too much, but I did go to Mitre 10 for the first time in a while, and yes, the process there has changed, but it was fine. Wasn't overrun. Maybe people have already been down because this was Sunday. Maybe people have been down on Saturday and got their 4x2 and whatever else they needed. So it was a good time to go, but no, it was good. And we got some rain in Canterbury this morning, so. The farmers will be happy, and life's pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, well, actually, Heidi was pretty good with her first week of school. Really, maybe they were shorter days, which they're sort of easing in and, you know, splitting the times that people can arrive and pick up at school. So short days for the new entrants. So she wasn't too bad on Friday. We had Fergus's third birthday on Saturday. So that was pretty cool. We obviously couldn't do anything major because you can't have more than 10 people, and we take care of five of those. So we just had a friend and their daughter over, and that was great. You know, the kids got to go off and play. We had some amazing cake, and I got KFC for dinner. So, you know, win all round, really. And even got out for a football kick around on Sunday as well. So, very, very good weekend up here. And, yeah, now obviously, like I say, it's turned to crap this week with the weather. But, you know, happy to be holed up in my room and get some work done, I suppose.
Yeah, sports. I hear a lot about community sport coming back and people looking forward to that. And also some high-profile sport. NRL's due to start on Thursday, I believe. So, maybe a bit more normality and something different for people to think about. You know, it's been a long, hard old slog. But, some more social-type activities would be good.
Indeed, yeah. NRL Thursday night. I'll have to re-log into my TAB account and see what's going on in there. It's something that's been neglected for the last 2 months. So, you know,
yeah, you've got to figure out the draw and everything. And the Warriors might have some guest players. And it's going to be, really interesting. Obviously, a distorted season. But, can see how it starts up again.
And, the key concern has to be how long does it last before a player gets COVID-19 and they have to shut down again. But here's hoping it doesn't happen. But, NRL, keen to get out there first to get going. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, let's head into the property market. Of course, as we, I think, generally do now, is to just look at the early market indicators first. And I think, you know, last week, really interesting week, essentially the first full week in level two. And really interesting to see those CMAs, those appraisals generated by agents, jumped up 20% week on week up to the end of Sunday. We really did see, as soon as level three hit, big jump, plateaued for the second week of level three. And then level two's hit, and we've seen that rise again to the point where those appraisals are sitting pretty close, not quite at, but pretty close to where we were at the year before. So we've certainly seen that lift, and of course that has flowed through to a lift in sales listings as well. So we are seeing the market pick up pretty healthily, and maybe the only side to that we're unsure about is why are people listing? Because we need listings to come to market for a healthy market. We know that we had low stock level before the lockdown hit, but because the people are listing because they need to get out of the market, that's a very different vibe from those that are just going about their normal business. So, yeah, interesting stats there, but we need a little bit more detail behind them before we can really take too much from it.
Yeah, and another couple of things I suppose I pick up from their report is that valuations ordered by banks have also just continued that steady upward trend as well. So we're also getting people obviously coming in looking for a loan, and so you've got sort of both sides of the equation going. And also the regional breakdown looks like sort of South Island has had a smaller fall than the North Island, parts of sort of Canterbury and Otago looking, I mean, still down, but less down than, say, Waikato Bay of Plenty, which has had quite a big fall. So, you know, as we've talked about, there's going to be regional differences in this recession. And so it's already coming through in a few of those sort of early market indicators. So, yeah, interesting trends to watch.
Yeah, agreed. And the other thing I was working on last week was just trying to get a better feel for what's happening in the rental market as well. So rental listings for sale, And I suppose, you know, there's a key couple of questions in there because there was this talk about, you know, all the short-term accommodation properties are going to flood the market. And so you see a massive lift in rental listings, and that'll start to see downward pressure as people, you know, leave a property, maybe move in with their parents or go into larger households because it's more affordable that way as well. And looking at the data, it doesn't seem to be the case so far. So we heard about, you know, these sites being flooded with new rentals. Not really the case according to the data. We did see a bit of a spike just before lockdown level four, actually. So maybe as there was a bit of uncertainty coming around, maybe people did leave their property, or investors were starting to see some uncertainty. There actually was a little bit of a lift in rental properties on those sites. But it dropped away during level four, of course, and we've seen a pretty similar lift to what we've seen with for sale listings as we've moved through level three and level two, but not to anywhere near crazy levels. So it's still below the last 3 or 4 years, certainly not above those years, which is what some of the anecdotes might lead you to believe too. So, you know, normal, healthy, I'd probably say, recovery from level four low levels to see that, yeah, number of properties being listed for rent is increasing at a pretty standard rate than you might have otherwise expected, pretty similar to for sale listings. So, yeah, good to actually get some data around that. And obviously, I suppose a key part of that will be to look at, you know, how that varies across the different parts of the country. And so we'll keep having a play with that data and bring that out once we get it.
Yeah, yeah, cool. I suppose flicking back to those for sale listings, I had a bit of feedback from a presentation last week. Can't say who, but just some interesting insight, which I think probably backed up our story around how pent-up demand is coming through from that lockdown period. And at the same time, those for sale listings, yeah, they're rising now, but the total actually available on the market is still pretty low. And of course, we're going to winter now, so there is this sort of reasonable level of demand coming through and a tight supply from the listing side. And that was the feedback I got on the presentation, and that's kind of the story we've been taking or talking about as well. So it seems like, you know, actually the market might be okay for the next couple of months, but the anecdotes that I was getting back was very much about, okay, that's cool, but what happens in August, September? That's what they're looking at, is the crunch period. And you know, wage subsidies are ending, mortgage payment deferrals are ending, you've got perhaps a spring rise in listings, the normal seasonal pattern, and what does all that do to the market? And that's what we've been talking about as well, that's what we're seeing on the ground. So yeah, it'll be interesting timing. And then in terms of just what sort of the general lending conditions, it's all about your income and your job security. Okay, the loan to value ratio rule still matters for sure. You know, nobody wants to be engaging in risky lending, but it's all about that income. And so for people going for a mortgage, it's going to be, you know, can you prove job security and you know, ensure that you can cover that mortgage. So yeah, interesting feedback on the ground, and fits with sort of that top down view as well.
No, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, your one, I think you'd mentioned, was from a second tier bank, which I think is quite interesting. And I had one this morning from a real estate agency, and, you know, quite similar, still quite a bit of optimism there. And I think that's natural as well. But what they are seeing some quite strong demand. You know, these people that couldn't get into the market in February, March, when it was quite competitive, you know, people, those values rising at quite a fast rate. And those people, many of them have seen no change to their financial situation. And we need to recognize there's still uncertainty. You know, every day or every couple of days, there's an alert on my phone from one of the news agencies saying this business has made some cuts, this business is making some changes, whatever. And that's going to continue to happen for a wee while now. So we can't look to think what's happening right now is the end of it. You know, we still got to get the economy going. These businesses are still grappling with a long period, relatively long period of impact to their revenue, and they're starting to make decisions and longer term strategic decisions now as to what that means for their makeup. And so while there still is some uncertainty and many people will be unsure about the future of their income, there are a lot of people who are feeling very comfortable and not expecting to see any change. And if they were looking to buy a property, either first get into the market or be an investor, or they're looking to upgrade or downgrade, they can go through, you know, as if nothing had happened. Not everybody, but there are many people who are in that situation. It's those ones now that we are seeing that are causing this level of demand at the moment, and that's why it's relatively strong, especially, as you say, because there's such a lack of listings and not much supply out there. So there's a bit of pent-up demand going for those ones. And the key question I had this morning that someone asked me was, you know, how long is that likely to last for? And that was a very difficult question to answer. But I think common sense does say it won't last forever. We are going to hit winter, where typically people don't like to, you know, trade and transact property as much. And then we will have the election come up, which does cause uncertainty. You know, what does the market do? What do people do? They sit on their hands if they're unsure about what the future means. And if National gets in, if it's looking like National, you know, could cause a bit of a miracle and get in, what is that going to mean for the market? And people might be cautious around that, although usually not too bad. What does it mean if Labor went through and got through to form a government on their own? You know, what could that mean for the future of the economy, for the property market? So any uncertainty around that's also going to just restrict things a little bit. So I think there's enough reason to say, you know, it's very real right now. Yes, we are seeing strong demand, but we're not expecting that to continue, you know, over the next couple of months through winter and pushing through to those pre-election months where we do see uncertainty coming. So certainly one to continue to watch for, looking at all those indicators, what is happening with the economy, how well are we bouncing back, what's happening at each of the different announcements as we can step down through the levels and have greater gatherings and more businesses can open up to be, you know, getting back to some level of, you know, normal revenue to get their business back on track. So we've still got a long way to go on this. But of course, some pent-up demand was acceptable or accepted with such a long period out of action through level four, especially.
Mm. Yeah, I'm reminded, I'm not going to try and quote it, but there's the famous Winston Churchill quote about the end of the beginning and the beginning of the end and all that sort of stuff. Maybe people should go look it up. But yeah, I guess it would be easy to forget or just think, oh, well, lockdown's finished. Sweet, it's all good. I'm still in a job. But actually, there's still a long way to go, and so yeah, it's probably not a case of counting chickens yet. And I guess on a more positive note, actually, is I mean, look at the mortgage rate wars coming in again around, you know, supporting that buyer demand and also people refinancing, you know, potentially rolling over onto lower rates. We've seen I've lost track of this flurry of sort of new rate announcements. I think the lowest we've got now is 2.65. I think that's what I saw. So yeah, that's come down from above three, maybe even only a week or so ago. So Reserve Bank will be happy to see it. You know, they put that subtle sort of message into the monetary policy statement that they expect these falls to flow through to retail rates. And so now we're seeing it. And great support for borrowers. And I guess highlights that competitive lending environment and how maybe initially banks were focused on protecting their own book. You know, it was all about getting people onto the deferrals and that sort of stuff, looking after clients. Maybe now it's they're also trying to, you know, go to the market and get some new customers in the door. So yeah, really interesting development last week, and then who knows where it goes. We all talk about, oh well, short interest rates are as low as they can go now, but I don't know, are they?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're going to come down, as you said, the not so subtle pressure from the Reserve Bank. They actually did, their chief economist, the Reserve Bank, did a live stream on Thursday morning where he took a lot of questions from the public and people that have submitted those questions, and a lot of them coming off about, you know, OCR and could it go negative. And, you know, once again, he said, yes, you know, it's a table, it's an option that's on the table. I know many of the bank economists now are tipping a negative OCR next year. And then, of course, the question means, what does that mean? Does that mean mortgage rates will be negative? And it seems very unlikely. But again, you know, you heap the pressure back on the banks to say they expect these drops to the OCR to be passed through to the retail rate. So, you know, given that, you would expect that, you know, you're going to see these mortgage interest rates continue to fall away over the next year. We know the OCR, given what the Reserve Bank have said, is going to hold at 0.25 for the year. But if it does go into negative, then you'd expect retail rates to drop as well. Maybe not quite in the same proportion, but it does mean that they're likely to stay even longer, even lower, even longer. And you know, even seeing the longer term rates come down a little bit as well as the size of the quantitative easing programs increase as well. So, you know, it is just such a competitive environment, as you said. And, you know, kind of another question we had this morning, you know, why is this different to the GFC? And you just got to look at you know, what the difference is then to now. The banks are being encouraged, told to be courageous, as Adrian Orr says, to continue to lend, whereas obviously in the GFC they were, you know, a big part of the problem and had to continue to tighten up. So, you know, such a different situation. As long as people have got their confidence and their financial situation looks okay and their employment future looks fine, then, you know, they're going to be able to secure some pretty amazing rates. But of course, we do have to continue to put that caveat on there that says, yeah, let's just be cautious around what happens around that September, October time, as some people will come to a big decision-making point. And I did drag out some numbers around New Zealand Bankers Association, actually, who are tracking exactly how many people have taken on the mortgage deferral. We've sort of thrown a few numbers out there from the banks that we got direct, but the numbers they were reporting on was that 54,000 customers with a total of $18.9 billion took up the mortgage payment deferral. So that's a lot of customers, a lot of money that is obviously on deferred option that will need to start being paid back again once they come to the end of that term, which could be as soon as sort of next month or the month after when 3 months is up. And then if they do get that extended, then obviously, you know, 6 months time. So, you know, a lot of people there would be tracking interest only terms from Reserve Bank for a number of, you know, years anyway, but they had some numbers of customers, you know, 59,000 customers. So we're talking in excess of 110,000 people here have taken the option in the last month or two to modify their mortgage payments to either lower or deferred. And those people who obviously are doing that for a reason, because let's remember when this all came about, brokers and bankers alike were saying, don't use these options unless you have to. It's not a chance just to, you know, save some money. You have to pay it back anyway, and it actually means your mortgage will increase in value over the long term. So it only should be a last resort. So you've got to hope that most of those people that are taking that option had to do that, and we're just doing it to try and save some short-term cash flow, which means that those people, when they do come to the end of these terms, are going to have a key decision-making point to say, you know, do I actually now want to sell my property because I'm not going to be able to afford to hold it long-term? Or, you know, what am I going to look to change my terms to keep that payment as low as possible in the hope that, yeah, my income comes back to a level I need it to be. So, yeah, that's one of the key things to watch out for, of course. And as I said, it's our continual caveat. Lots of positivity out there, but, you know, next 6 months is really going to be the telling time.
Yeah, for sure. And well, I guess we'll just keep reinforcing that. You know, it's got to keep that objective view on the market. So, yeah, agreed.
And the regional perspective as well. We'll continue to tweak our view and our data that we're getting on what's happening in the regions too, because, again, it's worth noting that any, you know, projected value drop, which I think is, you know, it's fair that most areas are going to see some level of drop, but any predicted level is nationwide, and we know that this is not a nationwide thing. It's going to affect different regions by different areas. And probably one thing worth mentioning, we did see ANZ's property focus come out last week. And, you know, they sort of reinforced their view of the 10 to 15% drop in values is likely, with even more downside risk, which I thought was quite interesting, because we're probably saying it's less downside risk than their original 10 to 15. Again, very hard to predict these things. I think any model that's got a genuine forecast for what values are going to do does not know how to account for the amount of support provided by the government and the Reserve Bank. You know, all the things that feed into those models will have never seen anything the likes of the quantitative easing programs and wage subsidies either. So, you know, I think those are what sort of bring our cushioning factor up, whereas there's other things that will push that downwards, of course. But I think that you need to be conscious of that. The nationwide figures as well, the regional perspective is the key thing we need to be conscious of there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we're talking about property here. You don't buy the average property, or even the Auckland average, or even the Ashburton average. You're buying an individual property, and that's where it's at that nuts and bolts level. That's what it's all about. So, yeah, it's always important to keep that perspective in mind. And I think around some of the forecasts out there, you touched on it earlier about the banks now being encouraged to be courageous, and, you know, a lot of talk about being supportive, and, you know, nobody wants to see forced sales and mortgagee sales and all this stuff. The mortgage payment deferrals, all these things, big difference from the GFC where banks were having to pull back and shore up their balance sheets. It seems to me to be quite different this time. It's a much more supportive environment. So, yeah, in terms of those forecasts for house prices to fall 10 or 15%, maybe with some downside risk, could be right. Who knows? We'll wait and see. But for me, that factor of banks, you know, being right at the heart of the support package is a big difference and is a sort of upside risk, if you like, to those forecasts. So, we'll keep an eye on it.
Totally agree. I mean, we'll move maybe slightly more, I don't know, macro sort of stuff and just some of the data that you tracked last week. There was credit card spending data out. What's that kind of telling us? All pretty grim, isn't it?
Yeah, good way to put it. It was very weak. So this is Reserve Bank stats that measure sort of billings on credit cards across the country. And so total monthly billings in New Zealand in April, which is, you know, the first month, the key month of data that people are looking at now, fell 41%. So total money booked up on credit cards was down 41%. Biggest fall on record. So that's from March to April, biggest fall on record. And billing on overseas cards used in New Zealand was down 60%. So no surprises there. You know, the lack of tourists, no surprise that was down even more sharply. And domestic cards was down 39%. So across the board, it wasn't just tourists, it was locals as well. And of course, no surprises because we were locked down. But I think it just goes to show, you know, that scale of weakness. And we've seen it in real estate sales. They were down 80% in April. So again, it just adds that growing body of evidence that things were weak. No surprises, but put some numbers on it. And so again, it sets a line in the sand, I guess, and we'll see how that goes over the coming months.
Yeah, and a couple of other announcements, I suppose, I just want to touch on from last week. One thing I saw at the weekend was some changes to the Building Act, which increased the number of building consent exemptions. Now, the number of things in there, and so for listeners, worthwhile checking that out if you are someone that's interested in modifying your property. But I suppose from my perspective, one of the ones that was really notable was the fact that you can build a sleep out now and not require a consent for that. Now, from a perspective of, you know, increasing household size or having the ability to have a second, you know, dwelling on your property to house people, whether it's, you know, maybe kids returning or potentially for, you know, people to rent out or something like that. Obviously, that's good. Anything that's going to help get people with a roof over their head is a good thing. But I did think from a data perspective, the fact there's going to be no consent means that, you know, we don't necessarily get that consenting data, which means it doesn't necessarily get the final code of compliance data from the council, which means we are unlikely in the normal process to get that data. So we don't know that the number of bedrooms or the size of that property has increased. So not such a good thing from our CoreLogic nerdy data perspective. But of course, you know, good to see the ability to build, property, to improve properties is being improved. Which can generally only be seen as a good thing to remove some of that red tape, I suppose. So that was an interesting one I picked up on. As I said, there's heaps of stuff that got modified there, solar panels and all sorts of things. So worthwhile checking it out. You can go to, I think it's the building.gov website to see that one. And then maybe, not necessarily tied to that, but my mind does also go back to the announcement last week on the construction sector. Of course, we saw Fletcher's announce that they are making a number of roles both here and in Australia redundant. And I guess, you know, it does set a few alarm bells ringing for the construction industry. Big business like Fletcher's announcing that a bunch of roles being redundant. What is that going to mean for flowing through to the level of construction? We know that we need to continue to build property long term. Demand is going to, you know, continue to grow. And we don't want to see a massive dip in building in the construction industry like we did following the GFC. I suppose the one thing I would say is that from many of my interactions, either watching webinars or talking to people I know, you know, it does seem like the government is pretty firmly committed to making sure we don't see that dip in construction, both for infrastructure, but also for building properties. We know that as part of the budget, they announced wanting to build a bunch more state houses, 8,000 more state houses. So they are firmly committed. They've also spoken in a webinar, was it, with Megan Woods, and she was speaking about, you know, they're obviously wanting to ensure the banks continue to lend for new development as well. So there's been multiple areas where I've heard the government's commitment. Of course, we'll wait and see how it rolls through. But I do think it shows that the level of consciousness is there, that when these big businesses are maybe struggling and construction firms aren't going to do so well, the government's going to try and see how they can step in to give these long-term contracts, hopefully, to ensure that the building continues to happen. Because we know that especially places like Auckland, you know, we're going to need to continue to build. We've probably still got some level of deficit there. And in the future, if we do see, you know, any level of growth in population, in longer term, I still think it'll be attractive internationally. You know, give it a couple of years, then we're going to need to continue to build and build in the right places where there's the right infrastructure too. So one to certainly be aware of when you see these big announcements, but one that hopefully the government, whoever's in government over the next couple of years, will continue to make that commitment to support the construction industry, both from a lending position, but also from the actual construction side of things too.
Yeah. Yep. No, agreed. And it's not probably going to make up for any deficit or fall off in new construction, but at least, you know, those changes you talked about around making it easier to do renovations will fill some of the gap. And so that's got to be good. And people who are thinking about renovating, you know, that money they would have had to spend on consent and then the council processes and the code compliance and all that can now be redirected into the actual build. And so it helps the quality of the product, of the end result, and also might give tradies a bit more work as well. So yeah, it all seems good. Certainly that move on removing or the need to no longer have those consents for certain projects, but yeah, can it fill all the gap of any fall off in new building? Well, probably not, but yeah, step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, you know, a massive jigsaw puzzle with many moving pieces as well, right? Like, it's never one thing that's going to influence the construction industry. It's so many. So yeah, just good to keep on top of all those little things that influence it one way or the other, and government does play a big part, so we've got to keep that in mind. Speaking of which, I did have a bit of feedback during the week last week following our last podcast when we talked about the levels of debt to GDP and, of course, what the government might do to move through to a different situation or lower that debt. So Alex Gunn, good friend of mine who obviously used to work at CoreLogic, now is within government himself, he made a good point about, you know, there is the option for, you know, in a year or two down the track for governments to accept that GDP may just grow. If the economy gets back on track, the economy can grow at a faster rate than debt does, which actually leaves your percentage level of debt low and maybe even dropping further away if you do get the economy growing at a faster rate. And certainly he pointed to an article from The Economist, which spoke exactly about this, that around the world, that's obviously, you know, governments are going to come and grapple with what they do with their higher debt position now that they've all come to the rescue of so many different parts of their own economies to help them through the lockdown period that they've enforced on them, that they are going to come to a big, you know, decision-making point at some stage to go, what are we going to do about all this debt? And there are a number of different ways, which we talked about last week, but of course one of them would also be that, yep, your percentage can drop if your economy grows at a faster rate than what your debt is. So worthwhile accepting that. But of course, you know, there is another part to that, which the Economist article, and I'll link this article in the show notes and tweet it out as well, actually, for anyone that's really technical and loves that really technical economic, macroeconomic documentation. Also talks about the impact that inflation can have longer term on that as well. So there's some words of caution in there too, but certainly to say that is a valid option for a government to consider alongside other measures of looking at the tax base and things as well. So yeah, thought it was worthwhile one pointing out, and thanks to Alex for sending me that little message about that. It was a good little call out.
Yeah, thanks Alex for that. I think for me, it's actually just a good illustration. You talk about the technicalities of sort of tax and all that, and I think the man on the street probably just switches off a lot of the time when it gets to that level. But actually, it's a really good example of how household microeconomics actually applies at a government level too. I mean, the idea here for the government is that as long as you can pay the interest on your debt, your income or GDP in this context rises, and actually your debt becomes more manageable as long as you keep it at the same level by paying interest. Same thing for a household. If you keep your mortgage at the same size or slowly whittle it away, you're paying the interest, maybe a bit of capital, just keep up maintaining that. And if your income grows on the other side, well, then the debt becomes much more manageable. Same principle. And so it applies at that household micro level and the government macro level. And it's just a nice little example, I think, for people to take a minute to think about and go, hey, it actually does apply. So yeah, good one, Alex.
That's a really good point. I mean, yeah, especially, like you say, if your own wealth, it's your income, but also your wealth increases. So you see a property value increase, your debt stays the same size, your loan to value ratio actually changes as well, reduces, so which then provides you more borrowing power, which of course is a big part of how the property market works. So yeah, it's a great little personal example, I suppose, as to how it actually applies at that macro level. Good point. All right, mate. Well, I think that wraps up what was supposed to be a more quiet week for information and data releases, and it seems like we just had just as much to talk about anyway. Let's look slightly ahead then, very briefly. Of course, the big one for us from a CoreLogic perspective is that we release our Pain and Gain report this week. I will challenge you, give me your top 3 points that you want people to know from the Pain and Gain report that you wrote last week.
Okay, 3 things. Well, I don't want to give too much away because there'll be the report will be out shortly, but 3 things really: gain, or in this case, the share of sales that are made for a profit or above the original purchase price. That share is still very high, so no surprises there probably, but that is what the report talks about. Regionally, Dunedin, and so there were no resales for a loss in Dunedin in the first quarter of the year, so it just shows how buoyant Dunedin is. And actually Auckland showing improvement as well, so that regional picture reflected the national picture. And I think just the third thing, really, and probably the key thing, is that, okay, these figures, they are what they are, they're strong, they were good around the regions, but they were Q1, and so they predate all of this. And so they're really, again, that line in the sand for how we look back and we say that's what the market was looking like then, but we recognise now things have changed. And from here on, the Q2 figures and the Q3 figures are pretty hard to see anything other than a rise in the degree of pain, or people having to look at those asking prices and potentially sell at a price below what they paid, especially with a short holding period. So from now on, we'll see. That's the sort of caveat to all of this, is that they relate to a period pre-coronavirus, and now let's see how it moves from here.
Yep, good point. And I think if I can add one more, it is probably, I think this is what we might get questions about, is that how bad has it got in the past? So of course, one of the good things, we've got the historical view as well. And I thought that a couple of things you'd pulled out in there was that in 2001, 28% of all sales in one of the quarters in that period happened at a loss. So you compare that to now, to what would be 3-point-something% at a loss, and it's got upwards of 28% in 2001. So it does show you where it could get to if the downturn gets as bad as it was then. And in 2011, so off the back of the GFC, it got to 20% of sales incurred at a loss. So just get some historical perspective maybe as to what we might see on the really downside of the equation. Of course, we have been pains over the number of weeks now to say we don't really compare to those historical periods. But I think it's only natural when you put in historical charts and these reports that you're going to look back to there and go, oh, how bad did things get back there? And it does differ by different city and different region as well. So it is worth noting some of those differences across the areas. And then within that as well, the fact that, part of our commentary is often around when we do see a downturn in the market, it's investors that are more likely to sell at a loss than owner-occupiers. And that has stemmed from this report as well. And so when you do look back to some of those periods, you can see it's a slightly higher share. I wouldn't say it's massively, different, but certainly there's a slightly higher share of investors who are, more financially driven, more likely to get out sooner rather than later, and, realize a loss as long as it's relatively small, and they sort of push towards the future rather than dwelling on that, whereas owner-occupiers maybe try and hold on longer until they really can't afford to own that property, and then they sell later on, maybe still at a loss, but not quite the same share of those as well. So that's something I'd probably pull out, is just a historical view of it. What else are you looking out for this week, mate? A few macro releases?
Yes, we got the financial stability report from the Reserve Bank on Wednesday at 9 a.m, I believe. So bit of a hard one, this, because it is backward looking and sort of just a big wrap up of where we are and how they see the stability of the financial sector across the country. I mean the property, we're going to see some talk of the mortgage system and payment deferrals, all of this stuff really that's been happening over the past couple of months. Property will feature, no doubt, and could be commercial property. There's been a lot of talk about rental payment problems, and are we going to see a sort of, people coming back to offices but needing less space in the future than they've had in the past, and what that might mean for the owners of those properties and the financiers of those properties. And so, yeah, commercial property could feature, but just generally it'll discuss where we are and we're I guess some thoughts about where we might be headed. But it's a big document and one worth watching. We've got mortgage lending stats for April, so this will be, for me personally, a big one of interest, because obviously that covers the lockdown period, and we know sales of property were down 80%, so you'd expect a pretty big fall in mortgage lending as well. Maybe not as big, because you know we know there's always a volume of refinancing going on, so that there is some mortgage activity, but it will be slanted more towards refinancing than new loans, you would think. So that'll be an interesting one. And that shift towards interest only, you know, that we already saw some evidence in March's figures that had taken place, even in that sort of last four or five, we only picked up sort of 4 or 5 days of lockdown in March, but already signs that was happening. So I'd expect that to continue in the April numbers, and that'll be the ones I'll be watching for. We've also got a business confidence survey from ANZ, the full release for the latest month of figures. We get a preliminary indication, which was weak, and so this will be the full release, which will probably say much the same message. So yeah, it's but no surprises there. And I think with confidence surveys, it's all about, I guess, where we're heading. And so we're looking now for the trajectory rather than the level. It's all about the change, because we know it's going to be low in level terms. So it's about, are we seeing an improvement? So those are the ones I'll be looking for. But a sort of busy week for data.
Yeah, it is actually. And as you said, like the financial stability review really seems to, certainly from my perspective, come out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting that one so soon, but always good to get those, you know, really formal takes from the Reserve Bank as to where they see things at. So looking to that. And the mortgage lending data, as you say, you know, it's going to be much lower. But from the LINS title transaction data, which tells us how many settled sales happened, I'd expect about a third of maybe usual activity to have come through. And be interesting to see that makeup. I'm expecting to see a drop in the first home buyer drawdowns in April as well. So those would be my kind of, you know, quick takes on what to expect there. All right, mate, well, that's going to wrap us up. Did I miss anything? Anything else from you?
No, that's all good. As I say, just, watch the data again and see where we get to.
Brilliant, mate. Yep. As always, thanks very much for all your insights. Bloody good stuff. And I just want to say thanks for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. It does help us to spread that word and get in touch with us as well. Twitter, LinkedIn, email addresses as well. Put all those in the show notes. And as I said, I'll link that article and let me know if you've got any thoughts on those ones. Otherwise, thank you very much, and we will speak to you all next week. Bye.